Bandwidth for this podcast is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com. This Week in iPhone, episode 77 from March 8th, 2010. The podcast formerly known as iPhone Alley. This podcast is brought to you by GoToAssist. For your free 30-day trial, go to GoToAssist.com/Alley. All right, it's time for This Week in iPhone. I'm Michael Johnston, and we're here to talk about the iPhone, the iPad, the App Store, and all that fun stuff. And joining me today is Mr. Jeff Gamet from the Mac Observer. Hey, Jeff.
Hey, it's great to be here. What did you just call the show?
I called it This Week in iPhone.
Okay. I just want to make sure that I turned on Skype for the right podcast.
That's all. This is the same podcast that you're very much accustomed to. Previously known as the iPhone Alley podcast. And I'll get into that after I introduce Adam Christensen from the MacCast. Hey, Adam.
Hey, how you doing?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm great.
Okay. So you both probably have a vague idea of why I changed the name, but to let everybody know, I sold iPhone Alley last week. And that did not include the podcast. So they were interested, the people I sold it to were not interested in the podcast. They were interested in the blog and the forums and all the internet facing stuff. So the audio they weren't interested in. So I figured we might as well change the name of the show because we're going to be breaking off from the iPhone Alley website pretty soon. So, but the feed should magically work because we're using FeedBurner already. So once I set up a new blog, I'll just forward it and you shouldn't notice it at all. It's called This Week in iPhone already in the iTunes store. Some of you noticed within hours of me changing it. I wasn't sure how observant everybody was, but I got tweets very quickly after I changed it. But to be totally clear, we're going to continue doing the podcast. That's something I intend to do for a while, unless I get tired of it, but I enjoy it so much I think I'm going to keep doing it. And I think I'm going to have a larger explanation of what's involved with me selling iPhone Alley and what my involvement is going to be with them down the line. But I'll put a link up on iPhone Alley probably this current week, which is the week of the 8th of March, 2010.
Now, I understand you chose to go with This Week in iPhone.
Yes.
For the new name.
Yeah.
Because Bill Palmer already has the rights to iProng.
Yeah, I would have gone with This Week in iProng otherwise. is that what you mean?
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. Because we do talk a lot about iProngs too.
You know, I just wish Bill had been here to appreciate that little joke.
I'm sure he will. I'll let him know.
Okay,
we'll send him a gift basket with a note that said that you put the you put a joke in there just for him.
I did, and I did it, Bill, because I love you, man.
Yeah, we tried getting him on for anybody who's interested, but we'll get right into the.
But he has caller ID, so he wouldn't answer.
Yeah. Yes. Okay. So we're going to get right into the stuff, the meat of the show. The iPad stuff is first on our list. It's official. The iPad's going to be launching on April 3rd with the 3G unit arriving later. Yay, right?
Finally.
I think we all established last week that we were getting iPads, right?
Yes. Yes.
I'm planning on picking mine up on the 3rd.
Okay.
And you have. I will be waiting.
I'll be waiting too.
I'll be the guinea pig. Whatever.
That's good. But I'm really looking forward to what kind of applications come out in the days between the Wi-Fi and the 3G launch. Really, because I have no need for an iPad unless certain applications come out that excite me.
So, are you not excited about the Omni apps?
I am excited about those. I'm not sure if they're going to be out immediately. So, you know, if they come out with OmniGraffle and it looks amazing on day one, then I'll be a little bit jealous, but I don't use OmniGraffle every day. So I'll be able to hold out until then. And I know for a fact that OmniFocus is pretty far down on the list for iPad applications from the Omni group. I think they kind of changed that a little bit. Jeff, you got an interview with Ken Case at Macworld, right? And he let you know the same kind of deal that OmniGraph Sketcher and OmniGraffle are going to be the first apps. OmniOutliner will be after that. And OmniFocus, then OmniPlan.
Right. And, you know, even though I know everyone has their own priorities for what they would like to see first, it kind of makes sense to me to do it this way. Because OmniFocus, even though it's just an iPhone version, notice that I'm saying just an iPhone version. Wow. Anyhow, it's the iPhone version. So it'll be a small window where you blow it up. There's already something that will be available on launch day. But
yeah, you can get
the other
get your
apps,
iPhone thing.
There's nothing.
Yeah. For which apps? For the other apps?
Yeah, for the other Omni apps, there's nothing. Lease it. So focusing on the apps that they don't have available for the iPad or
for the iPhone,
that makes sense.
Yeah, and I think that having OmniGraffle makes a ton of sense on the iPad, more so than having OmniFocus on there. Because OmniFocus totally makes sense on the iPhone because you always have your iPhone with you. But you're not always going to have an iPad as much as you would an iPhone or an iPod Touch because it doesn't fit in most people's pockets.
You know, excuse me, for me, the iPad, in addition to being something that goes around with me, it's actually going to be set up on my desk and I'm going to be using it all the time along with my MacBook Pro. So that's where I want to see OmniFocus sitting. So I can be looking at all my stuff on my computer and then just reach over and tap on the OmniFocus stuff.
That'd be cool. I might be that like ADD that having a little computer off to the side that just tells me what to do would be pretty beneficial.
I do that with my iPhone right now, but it's the little screen, and half the time I'm looking out of the corner of my eye and I knock over the stand that I have it in, I need to work on my eye-hand coordination or drink less.
I think the coordination thing, you can continue the drinking.
I'll focus on that.
Yeah.
So, but the point is, having the bigger display with, I guess, larger target areas for me to try and hit sounds like a really good thing for me.
Yeah. I don't think they had anything built or started for OmniFocus when I saw what Ken had, but he showed me some mock-ups, and it looks really cool. And they're definitely trying to make something that isn't just a simple scale-up of the iPhone application. It looks like they're almost building the entire Mac application, and that wouldn't be too tough to do as far as, conceptually.
Now, have you noticed that there's other companies that are taking the same approach, where as opposed to just adding an iPad interface to their iPhone app, they're writing a whole new app?
Like which companies are specifically?
Agile. They're doing 1Password.
Oh yeah, that looks so good.
Yeah, that's the one I can think of off the top of my head. I've seen a couple others out there.
There were other. There was the comic book guys.
Right. It's the kind of reddish orange icon with the
panel fly.
Thank you.
That's why we have you here.
I'll just chime in with random names when you guys get stuck.
Yeah,
right. And we'll just go so that we, even if it's the wrong app.
Mm-hmm. So there have been some rumors coming out, and I think we talked about this first one last week about who was it? Peter Misick. Talking about how there may be iPad manufacturing delays, something like 300,000 units in March. And of course, we now know that the iPad is coming out in April.
Which is late, by the way, right?
It is late, yeah.
Yeah, by a couple days.
Mm-hmm.
If you use the last day of the month as that.
Yeah, there's Apple again.
Yeah, the
joking.
The interesting thing about that first report, you know, we kind of dismissed Peter's initial story about that because he hasn't had a great track record in the past. But we got another analyst talking about 200,000 units available at the launch, and again, he cited something you know, that Apple would be launching in March instead of April, and then it would be U.S. only. And it is going to be U.S. only in April, right?
Right, which is no surprise, I think.
Yeah, I think we all assumed that it was going to be a U.S. launch initially. And according to Apple, it's going to be when the 3G version comes out, they're going to start distributing worldwide, right? Or in many
other countries.
Well, I think even sooner
than, well, I think it depends on where you are, because... Well, I don't know. It depends on if, are they going to, I guess I just assumed that with the 3GS, it was going to be later, but.
The 3G version of the
yeah,
iPad?
Sorry, yeah, yeah, 3GS, 3G version.
Yeah.
Yeah. Based on the press release, excuse me, that Apple put out, it sounded like when they do their rollout for 3G when they do the 3G rollout in other countries, I have to start that sentence over again because I clearly can't speak today.
Go for it. We'll edit it. And by edit, I mean not.
You mean
edit.
You'll leave it in, yeah. And I'll feel good for a minute and then I'll cry later.
No, it's
okay.
Cool.
So what they're going to do is Wi-Fi 3G at the same time in other countries when they do the rollout.
Yes, that's what it sounds like.
Right. And they kind of implied that that was going to be the same time that 3G happens in the United States, but didn't say that specifically.
I'm just on the site now because I had to bring it up because I read through it about four times and the wording on it is very confusing. So Saturday, April 3rd in the US for the Wi-Fi model, right? And then they say late April for the Wi-Fi and 3G models.
Mm-hmm.
In addition, all models of the iPad will be available in Australia, Canada, France, Germany, Italy, Japan, Switzerland, Spain, and the UK in late April. So they do say all models.
Okay, so they did say late April. Okay.
Yes. Yeah, and on their websites, I was going to say, if you go to the UK, like I popped over to the UK website, and it does say, you know, they updated the page, it does say late April. So it does sound like what is happening is they're releasing Wi-Fi April 3rd in US only, and then Wi-Fi and 3G, at least in those countries that they listed then. And pre-orders start March 12th, which I'll be pre-ordering mine, because the other cool thing that they're supposedly doing is the whole pre-order and then pick up in store, which is how I think I got my 3GS, if I'm remembering right.
And that's why I'm planning on doing my iPad.
Now, what's the...
Yeah, that's awesome.
What's the advantage to picking it up in the store as opposed to having it delivered?
Just that whole experience.
Oh, okay, see, I can understand that. Yeah, I wasn't sure.
For me, it's a convenience thing because I'm planning on visiting the Apple stores that are around me on launch day anyhow.
Right, yeah.
So I'll be able to grab my iPad while I'm in the store. And since I know I want the 64 meg model, I want to make sure that it's... Yes, thank you. I want to make sure that it's actually really there. So I'm just going to do the pre-order so I can pick it up in the store.
Gotcha.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, the other thing is then you're not waiting around all day for the UPS guy.
Right.
Right. That's my other problem. I'm like, I gotta have it the minute it comes out. I'll be right at the Apple store the minute the door is open versus waiting till 2 or 3 or... Sometimes the UPS guy comes at 8.
Oh, yeah, that's the worst. And he usually comes at 8 when it's something really cool.
Yeah, and they're probably going to have a bunch of iPads on their trucks that day. I'm just guessing.
Yeah. John Gruber also wrote this last week that the delays in the iPad weren't because of hardware. It was actually more of a software thing. And that would make sense to me just because I've been playing with the iPad simulator on my computer, and it is still really buggy and weird. And yeah, it is the simulator, but most of the underlying software is there, and it is only iPhone 3.2. So,
you know,
but it is really buggy.
I think John's wrong.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I say that with love because John's an awesome guy, but I think he's wrong. I think this all comes down to the FCC approval process. And Apple assumed they had given themselves enough lead time to be able to get through all of that approval process so that they could start shipping the iPad at the end of March. And that ended up having to get pushed out a couple days because the government moves at their own pace.
So you don't think that the iPad was delayed because of anything on Apple's end? You think it was FCC?
I think so. I think the reports of part delays and low shipments out of the Foxconn factories, I think that those are wrong. I think it's just as simple as the government moves at its own pace in the United States, well, in every country. But yeah, I think that's what it is. It was just slowdowns because of government approvals.
Have there been any reports on that, or have you gotten any information on that to back that up?
Not yet.
So it's a special Jeff Gamet gut feeling.
Yep, I'm going on my Jedi instincts here. And what I have learned over the years is that the simplest answer in most cases is also the correct answer. And that would be the most logical, simplest place to see a delay.
Sure. I think that image of the supposed iPhone glass that you guys posted a few months ago, wasn't that kind of discussed last week about how it might have been for another product entirely?
Yes, I saw something about that. I find it interesting that that glass piece, which turned out not to be the iPad glass, it's shown up in two places now, as far as we can tell. And the first one is in some in-store or the front window displays at some of the Apple stores. And then now in some knockoff tablet thing out of China. So it might be the same glass in both places. It might be that just they look similar enough that it's hard to tell which one it is. But I find it very interesting that what appears to be the same piece of glass has shown up in two places now.
So you think that it might, well, I guess one of the reports or blogs about that subject has said that it's like for the iPhone display in the windows at the Apple store?
Well, what was it? I'm trying to remember now. I think it was an animated iPhone display.
Huh.
And it was like there was a big display behind and then the piece of glass in front. And so you have all these moving icons. And then the little glass piece sits in just the right place so that as the icons move to where it is, it looks like they're jumping into that screen.
Yeah, it's basically a big LCD on its edge that's wrapped in a iPhone enclosure, right?
Okay, so this is like the same thing that we saw initially at the Palo Alto store with the cool floating icons.
Yes.
Yeah, gotcha. That sort of thing.
Gotcha. Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. And then I saw the second piece, and that seemed more plausible to me, that it was just a knockoff iPad.
That's what I would guess.
Glass.
Yeah.
Yeah, and that seems completely plausible, considering the number of knockoff products that come out, especially out of China.
Yeah, and it's very likely that the glass was manufactured in the same manufacturing facility as the actual iPhone glass, too. I mean, that's not out of the realm of possibility. I don't know where iPad glass. I don't know where the iPad glass is coming from, but I mean, manufacturers all use the same suppliers,
yeah,
or sub suppliers,
like
Hon
Hai
and understand.
Foxconn and those guys. Yeah,
yeah. So that you're right. There's absolutely no reason why the iPad glass and this knockoff device glass didn't come out of the same factory.
Mm-hmm. Do you guys see that Netflix is asking their customers about, you know, if they would be intrigued by a Netflix streaming application for their iPhone?
Do they even need to ask that question?
I don't think they need to ask that question, but yeah, so they had a survey, and it reads, it's almost like a short story. It starts like this. Imagine that Netflix offers its subscribers the ability to instantly watch movies and TV episodes on their iPhone. The selection availability is available instantly to watch. Includes, I should start that over. The selection.
Yeah, this is where you get to do the pretend edit, and then you can cry later.
Edit. The selection availability to instantly watch includes some new releases, lots of classics, and TV episodes. There are no advertisements or trailers, and movies start in as little as 30 seconds. You can fast forward.
No, I don't want that.
Oh, yeah, I don't want that. Sounds stupid.
Sorry. So it's basically, do you want Netflix streaming on your iPhone or your iPad, right?
Yeah.
And who's going to say no?
All right, so what I want to point out is that when a company does a survey to gauge interest, and I'm doing air quotes just everywhere right now, that doesn't necessarily mean that they're planning on creating whatever product they're asking about.
Well, they're thinking about it in a positive way.
I think they would like to have a product available for the iPhone and the iPad, and I think that this is a tool that they are using to try and manipulate information in their favor so that they can go to the movie studios and say, look, this is something we want to be able to do, and get them to agree, and then go to Apple and say, look, there's really high interest in this, so let's work out a deal. And now, but that doesn't translate to, hey, we're starting to work on an app. My Jedi instincts are telling me this is a business move to manipulate data in a way that's favorable to them. And I'm not saying that in a bad way, because that's how business works. You know, you want to make people excited about what you're doing. You find the information that makes it exciting. And I think that's what they're doing right here. So that said, I hope that in the end, this all works out in such a way that we end up with Netflix on our iPads and iPhones.
That would be fantastic.
They are saying Wi-Fi only in this survey.
Yeah, they are saying Wi-Fi only, but oh my goodness. If the iPad did Netflix streaming, I would be so content with just that one.
You'd never
feature.
Get out of bed, would you?
No.
that would be pretty awesome. The question is, will it cost more?
My guess is that the answer would be yes. And that because Netflix would be creating essentially a new service, and that would be the mobile streaming Netflix service.
Well, the survey says the movies and TV episodes you instantly watch are included in your Netflix membership for no additional fee.
Yeah, but, I guess but I really should have read that ahead of time, huh?
But they could raise the fee just because, right? They do it all the time.
Sure.
It goes up $2. So it's suddenly,
has it gone
instead
up?
Of $8.99 a month. Well, I used to have an account way back in the day that was, you know, it's just normal. They put it under the guise of normal yearly, you know, whatever price increases. And they usually grandfather people in too, depending on when your renewal times are. It doesn't, you know, like if you're in the middle of a contract or something like that, you only get dinged when you change your service level, and then new people coming in get charged more. But they could feasibly say, oh, your $8.99 a month thing is now $9.99 and it includes the mobile, right?
You know, they could also do something like, you know, right now, if you have the bottom level or the bottom tier service, which is one disc at a time, and that's what I have.
That's what I have too. It's $8.99 a month, I think, is the bottom level.
Right. So
with streaming included.
And streaming's included. Now, what they could do is say, well, you need to go up to the two disc at a time version, and with that you also get the mobile streaming. And then they would be totally correct in saying it's included with your Netflix service at no extra charge. It just happens to be at a higher level of service, and they wouldn't even have to raise the rates.
I'd be fine with it. I feel like I'm getting such a great value out of Netflix with all the streaming stuff. You know, I you know, just blasted through the entire like first three seasons of 30 Rock. Like, and
I do that with Mythbusters, and I just did V because I had missed the whole original.
Are they streaming
four episodes of V?
Cool.
Oh, maybe wasn't Netflix. Sorry.
Maybe that was some kind of hack.
Hulu. That's Hulu on Boxy. I'm confusing my streaming services. I have it all piped through Boxy, so I don't, it's all the same to me.
So you're doing Boxy on the desktop with Hulu? Or
yeah, Boxy's new beta is really, really cool because it doesn't even really distinguish what service you're getting it from. You go to the TV stations now and there's just like a big old library of TV shows, and then you pop over, and it can pull it from either the website. So is the is on CBS? Is that right? Or
yeah,
ABC?
I think so. I think it's
ABC. I think it's ABC.
Yeah.
Anyway, it'll say, do you want to watch it on from ABC.com or Hulu.com? And you can choose either feed, which is kind of cool too, because sometimes one feed is better quality or better streaming than the other. So anyway, an aside, that's a rat hole.
So you can get Hulu again on Boxy. I haven't been paying attention to this whole thing.
Yeah,
I knew at some point.
You got to check out the new Boxy, the beta. Now that they're in beta, I love it even more.
Can you do?
And they have an install for Apple TV again.
Oh, good. That was just what I was going to ask.
Yes.
That's exciting, even though my Apple TV is slow. It's always been slow. That's the one thing I don't like about it.
Apple needs to just buy Boxy and integrate that into the next gen Apple TV and then be
Boom.
Done with it.
Perfect. They don't even have to worry about
crush.
The content. And they sell Apple TVs like mad. But I wonder, Jeff, you were concerned about, it seemed like you were concerned about my comment regarding the speed of my Apple TV.
Yeah. I mean, so like it's just sluggish or do you get,
it's always
like
been
drop
sluggish.
Frames?
It's always been sluggish. The interface is just slow. And, you know, I'm wondering though, maybe it's, because I don't store all of my content on the Apple TV. I leave most of it on my computer. Do you notice sluggishness in the UI when you're going through menus and stuff?
I don't. And nope. most of my content is actually on my MacBook Pro. And not only that, it's on like an iOmega Ego hard drive connected to my MacBook Pro.
Yep.
And so I'm actually streaming content out that way.
I have the same thing, a USB drive with all my media content on it, and it's on my connected to my MacBook Pro.
And the UI is super, super snappy for you too?
It's perfectly fine. Yeah, the only thing that does happen is it does take a while to connect to the first time.
Like when you turn it on.
Well, if you go to the shared, so you go to the shared device, the first time it will take a little while to establish the connection to the Mac, but once it's connected, it browses fine.
See, the way I do it, I have it set up where it's linked to my desktop Mac, but it doesn't send the actual media over to the Apple TV. It just sits on the desktop Mac and streams it. So it has to pull the list of content, I guess, from the Mac as well. I should play with it.
Yeah,
I should try.
That's how I'm using it.
Really?
Yeah. Now, okay. Now, the one thing that I'm doing that may be different compared to you is that when my MacBook Pro is in my office, it's Ethernet connected to the network, and so is my Apple TV.
Okay, the Apple TV is not Ethernet connected. Maybe I should try that. I should really give it some fiddling around with, because you guys are making me believe that it's not a sucky product.
I would. You might want to just factory restore it.
I've done that.
So
I've gotten new ones actually.
Back on.
I've gotten new Apple TVs, and they're all slow and lame.
I hope everybody's enjoyed. Yep.
Oh, go ahead.
I was just going to say, I hope everybody's enjoyed this little sampling of this week in Apple Home Media.
Yeah.
We now return you to your regularly scheduled This Week in iPhone.
You know, everybody thinks that you're here to put us back on track, and that's true.
We've gone down a big rat hole.
Yeah. Okay. Before we get back to the big news of iPhone and iPad, the universe of that stuff, I'd like to talk about our wonderful sponsor, Citrix, with GoToAssist Express. You can give it a free 30-day trial. It's totally free. You have to enter in your credit card, but you can say, I don't want to keep subscribing. So there's no risk. GoToAssist.com/Ally for your free 30-day trial. Check it out. It's fantastic for anybody who does professional support, because as you know, you don't want to hop in your car and go to someone's house, especially if they're, like a cat lady or, someone annoying or someone who just doesn't get it. You don't want to go over there and deal with those people. You want to sit at home and you want to see their screen on your screen and do all the stuff right from your house. That's the way to do it. So it's incredibly easy. It's great for cat ladies and IT professionals alike, because all you have to do is open the application.
I don't have an any key.
Good one, Jeff. You open up the application on your computer. You open up the GoToAssist app. You don't have to log in or do anything with the internet. You can close your web browser if you want. That's one of the cool things about it, is you don't have to log in or do any of that stuff. You just open it up. There's a URL. You say, here's the URL. Go to that. Type in this number, and then you're seeing their screen. It does it all automagically on their end. You don't have to tell them to set anything up. It's fantastic. You see their screen. You see all the applications they're running. You see exactly what the hardware is that's on their computer. It's a really, really cool tool. And I'm glad that they're a sponsor, because honestly, I've never used the product. I hadn't used it before they were a sponsor, and I love it. I tried the 30-day thing, and I think I'm going to be renewing once that goes away, because it's really, really useful. 128-bit SSL encryption, so it's very secure. You can do up to 8 sessions at once. So if you're updating Cat Lady number 1, you can go to Cat Lady number 2 and update her too. It does Mac and PC. So if you're on a Mac, you can remote control a Windows computer. You can remote control a Mac. If you're on a PC, you can remote control a Windows or a Mac. It's really easy. You don't have to think about it. It just works for you. And you can try it free for 30 days and support the iPhone Alley podcast by going to gotoassist.com/Alley. It's very, very much worth giving it a try, especially if, you know, because it supports us. So gotoassist.com/Alley. And with that, we will move on to talking about upgrade pricing in the App Store. Did you guys see this? Someone tweeted out that they got this interesting dialogue box from iTunes last week saying, you don't qualify for this price. This discounted price is only available to customers who own a previous version of this item. To purchase this item for full price, click OK. It actually says buy. But yeah, that sounds a lot like upgrade pricing to me. Now, since that initial report came out, a lot of people were quick to point out that this is not a new dialogue, and it's been around for a while and actually been discussed on the MacRumors forums, as well as Apple's discussion boards. But regardless, I feel like the wording of this dialogue definitely indicates that Apple may add upgrade pricing to the App Store in the foreseeable future. Thoughts?
They need to do it. I mean, this is one of those features that just is, it's been a pain. I keep accidentally syncing Tweety over to my iPhone because I also have Tweety too. And why is Tweety on here twice? Oh, dang it. Or another, you know, classic example of that is Tap Tap Revenge, right? 1, 2, 3. Like every time a new one comes out, you can't get a discounted upgrade price. You just got to buy the app again.
Yep.
And then two, the developers have to come up with some sort of creative naming, or, you know, it's confusing to the consumer. It's a pain for the developer. It's, you know, it changes the whole software experience that we're used to and overly complicates it, which is certainly something I think Apple doesn't want going on in their store. You know, not to mention it gunks up the store, right?
Yeah. Yeah. It's another one of those weird issues that is could totally just make the store irritating and full of junk. So, you know, I think that my favorite example of why this would be great to have upgrade pricing, because some people are saying, oh, we don't want upgrade pricing. That's going to, you know, we're going to have to pay a lot more for applications and all that stuff. Well, first of all, you paid $2 for the application. Second, the developer has spent a lot more time, in most cases, much, much more time on creating a brand new version. And in the case of Tweety 2, it's an entire rewrite of Tweety, right? So it's totally worth paying to upgrade. And 8Bits has said that, Lauren Richter has said that he would have preferred an upgrade pricing model because a lot of people had Tweety. Instead of requiring everybody to pay $3, he would have rather had everybody pay like $2 or something like that, and then everybody else who hadn't already purchased it go with $3. And yep. I love Tweety. I was happy to pay $3 but it would have been better for the consumers to, first of all, hi, there's a new version, new and improved version of Tweety you know, that shows up like in the updates section, and instead of having to, you know, be told by your friends that there's a new version of Tweety out.
Right, exactly. That's another great example of a problem that was really annoying. I didn't even know it was out for like a couple of days. I was like, oh, there's an, and there was the confusion of, hey, there's a new version of Tweety. Oh, I ran my updates and, oh, guess what? There was a new version of Tweety. But they were talking about Tweety 2, and I was just seeing the latest, you know, patch.
Yeah, yeah.
For Tweety 1, and they're going, oh, yeah, it has all these new features. And I downloaded it, and I'm like, where are the new features? I don't see the new features.
Yeah.
It honestly took me a day or two to realize, oh, I got to buy a different version.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that's, you know, like I said, it's nothing to do with the developers. He was very well aware of all of those issues, but it's just something that Apple hasn't really come up with a solution for that yet.
Yeah. And would it solve the problem of, I mean, I know Apple tried to pawn off the whole, we don't have to have free light versions because we've got in-app purchase or whatever.
Right.
You know, as a way of doing the free to not free thing, or the trial.
You know, I don't know if they,
a trial thing.
I guess they could do that. Yeah. Because if you buy it as a free download, and it says in 3 days. I feel like that would be something that might come along with the upgrade pricing option, you know, when they roll it out. And, oh, by the way, we can do upgrade pricing now. I think they'd probably include that as
free trial thing. Fixed. That has to be fixed as well. Developers have to have a way to do a timed out
trial. It would help the App Store so much. It would help the good applications float to the top. It would help the bad applications just, you know, not be that popular, and it would just help the consumers in general find good applications and probably find more applications, because if an application costs anything and we don't have the option of trying it out before we buy it, we're very apprehensive at even $2 and $3 to download this, because it could just be total garbage. But if there's a free trial for most of the stuff, if it's shareware, I think it'd be a lot easier to find good applications and pay for the good applications.
Yeah. All right. All right. So just a quick question. And I don't know if I'm actually going anywhere with this, so I'll figure it out as we go along. I can't wait to hear how this comes out. All right. So how many times have you bought an application that costs $2 or $3 that you did just as an experiment, and then later on you went, okay, that was cool, or maybe, that sucked? For me, I don't know. I know I've done it. But as I was sitting here drawing a picture of a chicken wearing glasses, no, I don't know why, but I did. I was thinking, okay, so how many times have I done that with applications and really thought long and hard, should I spend $2? And how many times have I done that when I've gone into a restaurant or a coffee shop where I'll spend $4.50 or $12 or whatever trying out something that I've never had before, and it's worked out great or not. And I think that it's actually been a situation where when I go out, we'll just use the coffee shop thing because that's a closer price comparison, where I'll spend $3.50 or $4.50 to try a drink that it turns out I didn't like that much. And I'm okay with that. So why should it be any different for me at the App Store?
Well, I think that in that case, you're probably drinking your $4 cup of coffee, and yeah, it was kind of crappy and you're not going to get it again, but you've already had coffee and there was probably some caffeine in there, and you're not, you know, you're good to go. You're full for the time being. But if you, let's say you're looking for a good packing application, and most of the ones I've seen are terrible and almost unusable. If you know, you can go and one of these applications, I'm not going to say specifically which one it is, but one of these has just rave reviews about it, and I've downloaded it, and thankfully I got a free version so I won't feel bad that I paid any money for it. It's terrible. You know, it's really tough, and you're still looking for a packing application.
Okay.
So you know, I've spent $3. Now I have to go back in and find another one that might also be bad, and I'm going to have to spend another $3. I just feel like that would be good. Now, I was listening to MacBreak Weekly earlier, and Leo mentioned that you can get a refund on Android applications that you buy in the marketplace if you delete them from your phone within like 24 hours
Yeah, I remember seeing something about that somewhere.
Which is awesome. You know, granted, it might be a little extra work on the back end of whatever system is facilitating those transactions, you know. Mm. But, you know, if you look at the App Store, iTunes doesn't really charge you until you spend like $10 or more, right?
Well, yeah, they try and it's a timing thing, and that's probably why it's working on the Android to have a 24-hour period, because they probably have a 24-hour delay before they charge the card.
Right.
Because they have to pay fees on your payment processing, and it's usually a percentage of your total. So they don't want to do a bunch of little tiny, you know, 99-cent or $1.99. They'd rather do larger and fewer transactions, because they pay for every transaction. So if they can bundle them up, you know, it's less payments, it's simpler on their billing process and stuff like that. So likely what they're just doing is they're authorizing the purchase, they're holding to wait to capture or gather that money. And so if you kill it within 24 hours, they can just say, okay, in the batch tonight, don't charge the card.
Yeah.
So Apple could do something similar probably pretty easily.
I'm guessing that they won't, though. That seems almost too complicated, because you have to know about that ability, right?
You know, maybe it's one of those things where Apple chose to invest the resources at the beginning of the process, and Google is investing the resources at the end of the process. So in Apple's case, they are screening all the apps before they come into the store. And so that takes a lot of money to make that happen. In the case of the Android marketplace, any app can go in. So Google isn't having to do any investment in screening applications. So maybe they're taking the money that Apple's putting at the front end and putting it at the back end to manage that whole process of doing refunds and bumping apps out after they find out, okay, yeah, this is a horribly bad app that makes the world implode or whatever.
Well, you know, that really doesn't require a whole lot of, if any, manpower. Right, it's just a computer thing. Like, oh, if it receives the fact that it's been deleted, then okay, never mind. We're not going to charge for that. I think it's automated enough that it wouldn't really cause Apple to lose much, if any, money. And I think they're making a very slight amount of money on the App Store and iTunes with the 30% cut that they're getting. And we talked about that previously. But so I think that they have a little bit of room to do that. But again, I feel like it that would be a little more complicated than just going with a shareware kind of model.
Yeah, I don't know. Now, regardless of how the whole process is happening, I think it would be cool if Apple did something like the Android marketplace, where you could have that 24-hour tryout window.
Yeah, they got to do something.
Yeah, and I'm okay if Apple does something like that, and they're so strict with it. If you hit the 24 hours plus 1 second, too late, it's you're still paying for it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, because at some point then you're going to have people complaining about, oh, it's not fair. I'm slow to play with the applications. Okay, well, you know what the window is, live with it.
Yeah, yeah. Well, then there is the issue with, you could sync it to your computer, and, you know, some people will sideload their applications anyway. So Apple would have to be sure of the fact that all copies were erased, and they'd have to—they probably have to tweak the FairPlay servers to, I guess, maybe once you delete that, it tells the FairPlay server, "Hey, it's not authorized to use that application anymore," and then it updates the database on your phone.
Sure, and yeah, so then the only way at that point you'd be able to avoid having the application kill itself would be to never connect your iPhone to the App Store ever again, and never connect iTunes to the App Store ever again.
We'd have to delete the, yeah.
Yeah, because you could do it where, like, if there's, say, some type sort of flag file that's on your computer that says this is still a valid license, and you delete the file that says, no, it's a bad license. Okay, at some point, the handshake happens again, and it just, you can have the App Store overwrite the database with your current list of approved applications.
Yeah, well, they've actually already solved that, because the way that the FairPlay database works is it's this one file on your Mac, and it's hidden, or on your PC, and I'm pretty sure that whenever you try to, you know, it already says, hey, I'm authorized to have this application, but I think it checks back when you sync up your phone, if it has an internet connection, and then it, you know, it sends it over. Actually, I take that back. It just checks the file when you sync over to your phone, and the phone actually has a very similar database on it. So every time you launch an application, it checks to see if it's cool to launch that based on that database. So if you, you know, if you delete an application within the 24-hour period on your phone, the database on your phone would say, okay, not cool to run that application. So if they add it back on, you know, that's not going to work. And then the next time you buy something on your computer, or if your computer changes, you know, like updates an application, that database is then updated based on what iTunes knows. So it would work pretty well. I think that could work with the current setup that Apple has with their DRM system.
Okay.
And they already do rentals too. So
that's true. So the system's in place. You're absolutely right.
Yeah.
Okay. So with that in mind, with the volume of applications that are sold through the App Store, I have to wonder if there's a scaling issue.
New server farm.
Yeah.
Just to process the returns.
Yeah, like, geez, you know, where could they build a server farm big enough to handle that? Maybe there's some land in North Carolina.
Are you alluding to some? Is that where the server farm is?
That's where that big facility is they're building.
Yeah. So they're still working on that? They haven't finished?
No. They're still working on it.
And we're just speculating on what that's for.
Oh, right. And my speculation that it would be to manage apps and purchases and all that, I'm totally making that up.
It could just be like a remote server for the Android replicant that they're building of Steve Jobs.
Replicants are cool.
Yeah.
Okay, well, I saw Blade Runner, so most replicants are cool.
Yeah. Yeah, I've seen Blade Runner too. Anyway.
Little Michael's growing up.
I know, isn't that great? Okay, so we should move on before everybody gets bored with this this stuff that we get sidetracked with. AT&T.
My guess is that there's a bunch of people out there going, chicken with glasses, really? And they still haven't caught up to the Blade Runner references yet.
Yeah, I'm still back there with the chicken with glasses too. If you want to scan that in and like send it to me, I'll include it in the show notes. That'd be great.
Sure, I'll be happy to.
Did you draw that on like a legal pad, or was that on your iPhone?
No, I have just a little spiral notebook sitting here. And
scan it in. We'll throw it out.
All right, I'll scan it in for you.
Cool. All right, then everybody will be happy. All right, so moving on. And this one's for you, Jeff, because you complained about the AT&T service at South by Southwest. But were you there last year?
No, I was there up until the day it was starting.
Oh, yeah.
My schedule was screwed up.
The network in Austin.
Yeah, so just Austin in general totally sucked.
Right. So AT&T has told GigaOm that they're beefing up their network in Austin like crazy, like a lot. Like they've added fiber to the back end, lots and lots of fiber, so they can support like four times more bandwidth than they could before. They have a distributed antenna system at the convention center with 50 antenna nodes, 8 cell sites. They're beefing up the cell sites around the area. They're using 3 different frequencies now, and they're doing the 850 megahertz thing, which is good for buildings and stuff.
Did they say how long that infrastructure upgrade stuff will stay in place? Is this just for South by Southwest, or is this a permanent thing? Because if it's just for South by Southwest, you know what? Don't even bother, because the people that live there have to deal with a total crap connection all the time.
Is it worse than San Francisco?
Oh, yeah. Oh. You're lucky to get an edge connection in Austin. So when I said Austin sucked, I love the city. I love the food. Everyone I met was totally awesome. I mean, it was a very, very cool place where you couldn't get a cell signal to save your life. I mean, it sucked ass. It was so bad.
Well,
it's bar none the worst place I've ever been for cell coverage.
Wow. Yeah,
except Italy.
Yeah, they say that the distributed system that they're putting around the Austin Convention Center, I assume that's going to be a permanent thing. Everything is going to be permanent except for the 3 temporary cell sites that they're deploying. They're doing two on wheels and one on a rooftop. But it seems like they've beefed up all of the cell sites in the area with the extra spectrum. So we'll have to see.
That's a nice start.
Yeah. Yeah. So maybe they should do that with, like, you know, for every event. Because I remember, what was it, Macworld 08 was terrible. I was getting, like, text messages hours later and that sort of thing. Actually, last Macworld was not that bad.
Yeah, the last two Macworlds, I've had pretty good luck with AT&T in San Francisco.
Mm-hmm. Just marginal luck. Like, my calls definitely dropped if I was in a certain area and, like, thinking about the, you know, naughty thoughts or something. But if I moved...
So pretty much all the time.
Yeah, it never worked. But if I moved, like, out of the little press area, I was good. So, you know, I guess a lot of this, and it's a recurring story, I know, but a lot of this is just indicating that AT&T was not ready for the crazy amount of iPhones and data that would require. And that makes a lot of sense because the iPhone's a, you know, revolutionary product and they weren't sure.
And it's easy to use.
Yeah. And it's easy to use. That's because you can get on the internet. You can actually do that now. Okay. So we're going to get into the big thing, the big story, Apple versus HTC. Apple, if you have not been keeping up, has sued HTC for, what was it, 10 different patents with regards to the Nexus One, the Droid Aris, and the MyTouch, and a couple other phones. So all the Android phones that HTC has, right? So I think this is because of what Google did. And that's what everybody's hunch is, right? That, you know, when Google enabled multi-touch on the Nexus One, what was that in response to? I can't remember. Like, Apple badmouthed Google or something, and then they decided to enable multi-touch, and then craziness.
I think you're making too much of a soap opera out of that part. I think Google was planning on enabling multi-touch, and I'm assuming that they just had issues getting it to work the way they wanted. When they sorted it out, then they went ahead and rolled it out.
It was my understanding that they had multi-touch enabled overseas on the Nexus One, and that there was a gentleman's agreement, quote unquote.
Oh, I hadn't heard that.
Yeah. You didn't know about that? Adam, are you still on the call?
Yeah, I'm here.
Okay. I wanted to make sure. I haven't heard a lot from you. But
I'm just listening intently.
How can Adam possibly talk? I can't seem to shut up tonight.
Yeah, so Adam, you wanna chime in now that we're giving you a break to pop in?
Oh, I hate this lawsuit stuff. I avoid it on my own show because it just bores me.
Yeah, it initially bored me when I first saw it, but it's now Google actually said that, you know, it's very obvious that this is not so much an HTC lawsuit as it is about the Android, because I think all of these patents are software patents.
Well, and I mean, this is just Apple doing what they said they were going to do, right?
That they were going to that they're going to defend their patents with the iPhone.
Right. And the problem when we start talking patents too, the other thing that the reason why I don't like covering this stuff on my show or talking about it is because, one, I don't really understand it all that much. Secondly, companies, as far as I understand, I mean, I was involved in writing some patents when I was at a company. My name's actually on a couple of them. And a lot of it is, when we sat down with the patent lawyers, it's all about blocking, what they call blocking. It's just making patents so that other people can't do something similar.
Right.
And so that's what a lot of this is. And the patent office is just, you know, issues these patents and then you have it. But then you still have to go out and defend it. And it just gunks up the system. And very often, so it's another reason why I don't cover when rumor sites come out and say, oh, Apple has a patent for this, Apple has a patent for this. They probably never intend to do it. They just want to make sure that nobody else can.
Yeah. Patents are pretty lame, to be honest.
Well, they shouldn't be. I mean, they aren't lame, and there's a really good reason that we have patents and these kinds of protections and laws, but it's become so abusive how companies use them now that it just frustrates me. So you're going to get me going on my rants, but it's just sort of like, okay, great, another lawsuit. I mean, these things are going on all the time. If we could spend, you know, every episode doing the Apple you know, who's suing Apple and who is Apple being sued by thing surrounding patents. And we could do, I think there are whole podcasts on it now, or at least there's websites. So
like Patently Apple, I think, is one good one.
Yeah.
But yeah, a lot of these are let's see, touchscreen device method and graphical user interface for determining commands by applying heuristics, object-oriented graphics system. it seems like Apple's really stepping up with this whole Google versus Apple thing.
Well, and they have to, otherwise those patents become moot, right? So
yeah,
it's the same. Right. I think it's very similar to trademark law, where you have to protect your trademark, and if you don't, then you suffer maybe losing it. And ultimately, what it comes down to is gaining some licensing money, which can be good for Apple or Google, whoever holds the patents. But some of these get so vague and so strange, and Apple even has lost some of these and has had to pay some really silly, what, you know, seems like this is a really general technology kind of patent, and how could this be something that I have to license, you know, from someone? So, you know, a lot of these things end badly as well.
Jeff, do you think this is big news?
I think this is Apple following through with what they promised to do, mm-hmm. which is to very vigorously defend the patents related to the iPhone. And I think it's just business. This is what they, just what Adam said. This is what Apple has to do to be able to, down the road, make sure that they can still claim their patents. So,
well,
as far as big news goes, okay, we're talking about big companies and big products, and the posturing that goes along with all of that. Mm-hmm. But this is not something that should be a surprise to anyone.
Yeah.
Apple had to wait until a certain threshold was met. And based on their legal team, they've decided that threshold has been met. So now they're going after the company that's actually shipping products with the what they see as patent infringing technology.
They've even contacted the ITC, the International Trade Commission, about blocking HTC devices from being imported.
Yeah, and that's just business as usual.
That is a pretty standard thing.
Tactics that they take is, oh, we want to block all your imports. And it's happened to Apple too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it never ends up getting blocked. It goes into lawsuits. And I'll tell you the outcome. And
except for Microsoft and Word.
Yeah.
Okay.
But that was just
happens.
Funny.
But, you know, and I'll tell you what else will happen is, you know, Apple will sue, HTC will countersue for their patents that they think the iPhone is infringing upon. And then they'll compare their lists and they'll go, okay, well, you have that one and we have this one and you have that one and then we have this one. Okay, we'll agree that those are a wash and then we're going to pay licensing on these from you and you're going to pay licensing on these from us. And, oh, you're going to pay these damages, we're going to pay those damages. And then everybody goes along their merry way.
Mm-hmm. Like sorting Halloween candy with your
friends. Years of back and forth.
Yeah.
Expensive years of back and forth.
Yeah. So I guess I don't understand, and this is where my lack of knowledge comes in, and maybe a listener will fill me in, but I don't understand in the end where that benefits anybody in the long run.
No, I think it's there to make us kind of sad about.
Well, I'm sure there are some business competitive advantage. I mean, there's something going on in the business side of this that makes it worthwhile for these companies
sure.
to do this. Otherwise, they wouldn't do it. So whether it's slowing down, you know, the competitor from their innovations or just distracting them, or I guess I don't understand the business side of it. But from a consumer side of it, that's where I get bored and go, okay, this is just really annoying. Because I have to read about the stuff or try and follow it. And in the end, it doesn't seem to really make a difference.
Yeah. What really does make a difference is competition, you know? So we obviously we would not want to see HTC not being able to import phones, because that would mean, oh, Apple can just, you know, go on their merry way and not potentially not do as much innovation as they could do. It may stifle innovation, but I doubt we'll see any issue with this at all.
Now, the irony about the statement you just made is that the purpose of patents is to foster innovation.
I know. And right? that's the sucky part about patents, is because when this kind of stuff happens, then
well,
things can get weird.
And this gets back to when they were done right and the patent and trademark office wasn't overwhelmed and there wasn't all this weird stuff going on and you didn't have reviewers approving things like one-click buy buttons on, you know?
Yeah.
And so now nobody can do a one-click buy without paying licensing fees to Amazon. You know, it's...
Really? Is that still a thing?
I don't know if it's still... I think it is. I'm sure it is. I mean, on the App Store.
You can't have a button that says
Amazon
buy.
Amazon has that. That's their thing.
You can have a button that says buy, but you can't click it and then you've bought it.
Right. Yeah. Without paying licensing to Amazon, or that's the way it was.
Oh, yeah. Good times.
You know, so it gets really strange. And again, like I said, you have all these companies that just have what inevitably happens where the competition comes out of it is you have large companies who can hire teams of lawyers and teams of people who are experts in this patent stuff. And they literally just go out all day and write patents for anything that they think a competitor might want to use. This patent blocking technology. And they may never plan to use that technology. But guess what? We own the patent. And if a competitor ever tries to do something like that, we can sue the heck out of them, maybe make some money and get some licensing money. So, I mean, to the big company in the end, that's an advantage. But what about the small guy who doesn't even realize that's out there and has this idea and then gets sued to oblivion? You know, and then the product never sees the light of day because the original company that got the patent never intended to actually even use it.
Yeah.
So
that sucks. Just,
and that happens. I mean, that does happen. So I don't know. Mm-hmm. Sorry to go off on my patent rant.
No, that's fine.
No, that was fun.
Mm-hmm.
And I want you to know, while I was sitting here silent, I didn't draw anything. I was actually paying attention to what you're saying.
That's all that we ask.
Yeah. But like I said, I'm definitely not. That's just all opinion and you know, what I think. So if people can, you know, I love doing this because inevitably what's going to happen is I'm going to get some emails from some of you out there and you're going to tell me why I'm wrong.
Yeah.
And that's what I look forward to hearing.
podcast@iphonealley.com is the email address for now. I think, you know, when we come up with a new one, we'll forward that for anybody who forgets or doesn't know. But right now it's still podcast@iphonealley.com. You can email us and let us know. Or you can comment on the show. We do a lot of that. There we have the wonderful Discus comments. We have a lot of discussion that happens with those. We actually got a way more comments than I thought we'd ever get on one story about Flash on the iPad, something like 80 or 90 comments. And a lot of the stuff was comments back to other comments. So threaded comments and stuff. That Discus thing is really cool. So that's on the, you can comment on the show notes at podcast or iphonealley.com/podcast. And with that, let's talk about our iPhone picks. Jeff, do you want to go first?
Sure. And hold on, I have to grab my iPhone because I can't remember the name of my app. But luckily, it's actually on my iPhone, and it's kind of cool. There it is, 3D Sun. And 3D Sun is this cool little application I came across that tracks solar activity. So you can track sunspots and solar flares. And see like real time images, and it's a very cool little application. And so if you have an interest in astronomy, it's cool for that. If you're also curious to know if there might be upcoming like cell phone outages because of solar activity, this is kind of a cool way to be able to track that.
Oh, cool.
And it does push notifications. So if there's like a major solar event that's about to happen, you'll get a push notification, so you know.
Do they have... I'm going to sound totally dumb when I ask this question, but I don't know about space. Do they have satellites going around the sun, orbiting the sun right now? Because I see that in a screenshot.
Well, there's satellites that are monitoring the sun.
Okay, but they're not...
I don't think we have any... Well, actually, we might have one right now.
It looks like there's something in this picture on 3D Sun in the iTunes store.
I can't remember off the top of my head if we have any currently active sun orbiting satellites or if they're all like satellites that are orbiting Earth that are monitoring the sun. Mm-hmm. So sorry, I can't remember. And I'm betting that at least one of our listeners knows a lot more about this than I do, and they'll chime in.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. So it's free, right? The 3D Sun app.
It's free. Yeah.
Cool. 3D space sun. Two words. And Adam, do you have an iPhone pick this week?
Yeah, I think I can come up with something here. I'm gonna go back, as I often do, to something that I picked up mainly for nostalgia reasons, but have enjoyed playing. Have you guys? Either you have the Trivial Pursuit app.
Oh, that is a blast!
Yes, yeah. So Trivial Pursuit, you know, was huge when I was growing up in the 80s. I don't know if it still is huge. I guess people probably still enjoy playing it, but they have an iPhone version from Hasbro, and it's pretty much, you know, like Trivial Pursuit. You can play a classic version, and they also have this mode called Pursuit, which I like to do kind of for the single player mode. And in Pursuit, you go up this, I don't know what you'd call it, kind of a trail, and you can branch off in different directions and stuff like that, and you answer questions in different categories, and then you earn medals, either gold, silver, or bronze, dependent on how quickly you progress sort of up from the start to the finish. But it also has a multiplayer mode, so you can play over Wi-Fi, so if you get a couple iPhones going. And it's just your classic, you know, trivia game. And they also, I haven't done the in-app purchase yet, but they have in-app purchase, so you can purchase like additional questions in different categories and things like that. But anybody who knows Trivial Pursuit, I mean, that's pretty much it. It's nothing nothing really out of the ordinary for the game itself, other than this new kind of pursuit mode. But I like to play it, you know, just for when you're waiting in line. It's cool to answer some trivia questions and learn some things. So I like it for that.
So is it multiplayer only if you have more than one phone, or can you like pass?
Well, you
it
can
around?
Do. They have yeah, a pass, pass, and, pass and play, pass and what they call the pass and play mode. Yeah, so one person plays and you just kind of hand the iPhone around.
Cool. All right.
I don't think they have. They don't have like over the net play.
Yeah. So you have to be on Wi-Fi.
Yeah. Exactly.
Gotcha. All right. Trivial Pursuit, $4.99. That is Adam's pick. My pick is the Fandango application. And oddly enough, I don't think we've talked about the Fandango app. We talked about the Fandango interface a while back. But this is an app I think everybody should have on their phone because, for one, it's free. And two, if you ever go to movies, it's so convenient to just, oh, yeah, I have the Fandango app. Let's pop that open. You know, if you're thinking about which movie you want to see, if you're not sure, you can see all of the movies that are playing local to you. So it figures out where you are right now and says, here are all the movies that are playing, you know, opening, top box office near me. And I don't know what the Go Now thing is.
How did we not pick this before? I love this app.
Yeah, I don't know either. It's
I use it all the time.
Yeah, it's fantastic. So you can see all the in theater stuff, or you can see coming soon, and so you get information. So I can click on, you know, Alice in Wonderland. I click on it. You can click on the by click I mean tap. You can tap on the cover art for the movie, and it'll play a trailer for you. You have a plot description. You can see fan ratings. You can see comments on the movie. So I guess you can you comment in the application on the movie?
I don't know if you can, but I mean, it does the Rotten Tomatoes thing.
This yeah, fan reviews. Tomatoes,
is
that from Rotten?
That's awesome.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah. So you can see all the reviews there, get a trailer preview. And of course you can say, I want to get a ticket for this showtime. You can see all the showtimes and for all the different theaters, and you can get a Fandango ticket. And that's how, I got my ticket for Alice in Wonderland in 3D last night. And it was, you know, way more convenient than doing the, you know, wait in line. I guess you have to wait in line still, and you slide your card, but you don't have to tell them anything. You just scan your card. They give you.
You're living out in a technologically advanced area, the Chicago metro area, right?
Yeah, ostensibly, yeah.
And they don't have the kiosks at the movie theater, so that you don't have to wait in line if you've pre-purchased tickets.
There's a thing. I don't know about this. Tell me more.
There's usually a little.
There's a magical thing kiosk for Fandango.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
I feel like I'm so out of it now.
Oh.
Oh. So you order your ticket on Fandango, and then you go to the movie theater, and off to the side, usually somewhere around a corner, out front, before you turn your ticket in, there's should be a little kiosk
that says Fandango.
Fandango and you slide your card. You say, pick up my tickets, and you slide your card in there and your ticket prints out. And then you walk into the movie theater.
Cool. That's surprising to me that we don't have that, to be honest. Rockford isn't huge.
Sometimes they're hard to see.
Tiny.
Some, like, I have one theater where it's like around the corner, kind of off.
It's possible that I haven't seen it. And I may be doing the Fandango wrong.
Well, and I've heard now they're trying to do the whole, although, you know, scanning on the iPhone thing doesn't work, but some theaters can barcode scan. And I've heard that, I thought it was Fandango, that some tickets you can, you know, like print out or show the on screen, you know, ticket or whatever.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but that'd be cool.
I hadn't popped the app open in a while, and as you were mentioning things, that sort of, you're saying it has that showing now or on now feature, go now.
That's cool. What is that?
Shows you movies in your area starting within the next hour.
Oh.
The next 60 minutes.
Oh, cool.
And then the other thing is I hadn't seen before on the movie details, they have movie tweets.
Oh, yeah. I saw that, too.
So you can get a Twitter stream of people talking about the film, along with the fan reviews.
All of this stuff is so useful. These are actually features that are useful and not just gimmicky, to be honest. I think they're great. I think this is a wonderful application, and it's free. And you should just have it on your phone. Just have it there. Because at some point, you're going to think, wait, I need that Fandango app. Oh, right, it's on my phone. Click.
I actually prefer it to the website. You know, I used to go to the website and I'll be in my house sitting right next to my computer, and I'll use the app rather than go to the Fandango website to order my tickets, just because I find the experience that much more pleasant.
Yeah, and it does the location-based thing, and you could do that with Safari, but I think the experience is much better with the application, and it remembers your credit cards and all that stuff. By default, you know, when I got my ticket last night, I didn't have the app loaded on my phone, but I had registered previously with Fandango, so I just loaded it up, signed in, and I was good to go. So it's, like I said, it's free. It's the Fandango app. Just search for Fandango, and it's awesome. Just get it. Have it on your phone. By the way, Alice in Wonderland was lame.
Oh, no.
Oh, that's too bad.
Yeah. So, but go see it, because it's nice looking.
It's pretty.
Okay, so if you want to go watch Eye Candy for 90 minutes or whatever, go see it. If you're going for an interesting story, don't.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
It was, and this may not be a surprise to anybody, but it wasn't like a rehash. It wasn't a repeat of the animated Alice in Wonderland. It's a continuation. It's like what The Wiz was to, not The Wiz. What is the other one? The Wizard of Oz 2. Was it just called The Wizard of Oz 2?
I don't even remember.
There was a Wizard of Oz 2, and it was totally wacky. And it was like the sequel when Dorothy comes back. It's totally like that. So if you're into that kind of thing, sure. 3D, do it. It's cool. There isn't a lot of gimmicky 3D stuff. It's actually, I think it adds to it, but yeah. That's my mini review. And with that, we're going to wrap things up here. Once again, I would like to mention goToAssist.com/Ally. Try it free for 30 days. And you help support the This Week in iPhone podcast. And we really appreciate that. And you can find the iPhone picks and show notes currently at iPhoneAlly.com/podcast. I'll have an update on that when we change the blog to something else. Again, with the feed, the email thing too, same thing. podcast@iPhoneAlly.com for now. And you can find Jeff Gamet at the Mac Observer, twitter.com/jgamet and macobserver.com. Thanks for being here, Jeff.
Hey, sure thing. As always, I'm amazed you put up with me.
It was a blast.
Week.
It was a blast. And Adam Christensen, of course, at the MacCast, MacCast.com, twitter.com/MacCast. And you're going to be coming out with some new stuff soon, right?
I'm trying. I'm
working
living
on it.
And a little bit of I've been having a hard time with the software that I was planning on using to do some of the premium stuff.
Yeah.
So I'm working through it, but it's taking longer than I was thinking it was going to take. So there will be an announcement. I just don't know when it's going to be. Working on things, working on new content, figuring out. I kind of all have that all planned out. Now I'm just trying to get the nuts and bolts put together.
Yep.
So as soon as that happens, there will be a big announcement and I'll have something to say and share. And there might even be a little alpha beta preview of some of the content I'm thinking now. So people can maybe look forward to that. Cool. I don't want to make too many commitments.
Yeah, we'll have more later.
More but the free stuff's still happening. So, yep. You know, just go enjoy the MacCast for that.
Yep, MacCast.com or search for MacCast in iTunes. And you can follow me on Twitter if you really want to. Twitter.com/Michael Johnston. There you can follow what I'm up to now that I'm getting away from iPhoneAlley.com and moving on to new things. I have new projects planned for the, you know, for the future. I'm not sure. I'm hoping for this year with my new ventures. So you can twitter.com/Michael Johnston, but I do warn you that there are the occasional butt jokes because that's what I like to do. So if you're put off by stuff like what Merlin Mann says, maybe you don't want to follow me. But you can if you want. And with that, another This Week in iPhone. We need to have a better sign off. We're calling it Twee. T-W-I-I, Twee. We're out the door.
An iPod.
So you got the thing in the email? You got your email? Did the mailman show up for that?
The notes, you mean? Is that what you're referring to?
Yeah.
Yes, I have the notes.
I like to say almost what I mean without actually saying what I mean.
So you're a girl.
Oh, wow. So what are we
gonna do? Yeah, I'm f***ed now.
More evidence to support Adam's suspicion from last year. Or was that 2 years ago?
Yeah.
No. Yuck. No. Yuck. Yuck. No. Who wants a stylus? You have to get them and put them away and you lose them. Yuck. No.